seven lines from the bottom of Samach Gimel Amid Beis. Yosef Rav Nachman v'Ula v'Avimi Bar Papi v'Yosef Rav Chia Bar Ami Gabayhu. So you had Rav Nachman, Ula, and Avimi Bar Papi sitting, and then sitting near them, with them, was Rav Chia Bar Ami. So Tosus points out that normally whenever you have this type of a format, where you have A, B, or A, B, and C were sitting there, and so-and-so was sitting with them, the so-and-so, the separate party, is going to be the one who's going to advance a chiddush. But it was, we're going to see in the Gemara in a moment, if that were the case, it should have been Rabbi Chia, who would have advanced something novel, because he was the one who was sitting Gabayhu. So Rabbi Natan was bothered by this because it violates his rules. So he points out something very interesting, which betrays his awareness of the editorial process of Shas. I didn't check with the Bar Ilan, but I trust Rabbi Natan's Bekias. These three figures, plus one, appear one other place in Shas. They appear in Ksubos. And in Ksubos, one din is mentioned there, and the person who responds after the question is thrown out is Rabbi Chia. So Rabbeinu Tam says that you had this collection of materials, these shmuos, these discussions, different halachic discussions they had at one particular sitting in their base medrash, and the editors in Shas distributed it to the places that it were actually relevant, which explains why, in other words, the reason why it's Yosef Rav Chia Bar Ami Gabayhu is because in the first one, probably, he was the one who actually said the Chiddush, and therefore it's presented in Shas throughout as if it's those three plus one, even though if you look at our Gemara alone, you're not going to find it. And what Rabbeinu Tam describes is almost certainly correct, that this does reflect, I can't say in this particular case, but there is an editorial process that takes place in Shas, where you may have materials that come from one source that are, you know, eventually distributed when the editors work on various mesechtas and various prakim, so they put them in their relevant places. Sometimes we're probably more used to seeing, I'll call the opposite phenomenon, where you get a series of statements that seem to be totally unrelated to one another, and they appear in a sugya, and you don't know why are they there. And Rashi will often point out, because this person and the name of that person, there are very few places in Shas where you have A in the name of B, and therefore they're all listed right here. So this is actually, Rabbeinu Tam claims, the reverse process, where you have an editorial distribution of the materials. Okay. So anyway, what were they discussing? So, Yasvi v'kamibai lehu. They had the following question. Scharo lishbar b'yayin nesech mahu. It's a nice double entendre, because the word lishbar can also mean to sell, as in lishbar bar mi mitzrayim, or to buy. But in this case, it actually means literally to break. So we learn the Mishnah, the beginning of the parak, that you're not allowed to be hired out, to hire your stuff out, to work with the Yayin Nesech. So now the question is as follows. Supposing somebody hired you, and your job was to smash barrels of Yayin Nesech. That was your job. So ultimately what you're doing is a kind of mitzvah. You're basically destroying Avodah Zarah, Tikroves Avodah Zarah. So the question is, are you allowed to do that? So why would it be prohibited? So the question is as follows. Mahu. Miam rinan kevan derotze bekiyumo aser, odilma kol lima ute tifla shapir dummy. It's a kind of interesting question. The one side, the Gemara says, listen, you are doing something wrong here when you're working for him, because you want that wine to be extant as long as you, or extant, but that my wife agreed with me, I think, on that pronunciation. You want the wine to stay there until you get to destroy it. So while before you actually do the avoda of breaking it, you're happy that the wine exists. So maybe, therefore, it should be problematic to take payment for doing such a thing. Oh, Dilma, lam ute tifla shabidami. We would prefer to eliminate Avodah Zarah from the world, and therefore it's basically a good thing that you're doing. We don't care that in the interim you actually want it to be there until you finish it off. So,
if he's getting paid for destroying the barrels, not for wanting the barrels to exist.
Correct, but so it's clearly not like someone who's transporting Yayin Nesech. But the question is, if in the process of doing your job, until you finish it, you actually want it to exist, it's almost as if it. I assume the Rishon don't say. I assume this Shaila is a Rabbanon Shaila, but I assume what they're saying is that Midrabbanon, they're treating as if it's yours a little bit, as if the Yayin is yours a little bit, and therefore the Schar becomes Asrbanon.
Necessarily, want it to exist as a prohibited substance. He just wants the physical yain. He doesn't really want. He doesn't need the isser to get paid.
So, but that would be true if I were transporting it on my donkey as well, right? I don't need the. I don't care what kind of wine I'm transporting. It makes no difference to me whether it's the Malaga or it's or it's some fancy yain nesach. Yeah. It makes no difference. But still, it's usser. Okay, so now, Amar of Nachman, Yishbar v'tavo alav bracha. Good. Enjoy. Break it. Probably it's very therapeutic also. And enjoy your schar. So the Gemara says, Lema misayele, can we prove that Rav Nachman is correct? Ein odrin ima oved kochavim bekilayim. Aval okrim imo kidei lemait esatifla. So we have a braisa that says that you're not allowed to hoe, to be engaged in chavira, to be working the land where there's kilayim in the field, helping the stuff grow, because that's a kind of zriya. But you're allowed to help the guy uproot the kilayim from the field. And let's assume for the moment, there's a discussion that we've shown him here, which I don't want to explore at great length, but let's assume for the moment this is an Eretz Yisrael, but the way Tosaf says that this is kilay zrayim. This is not kilay hakeren, this is not kilayim where you have grape seeds in the mix, which creates a problem of an iser hana. This is simply a question of kilay zrayim. Kilay zrayim, you're not allowed to plant two seeds of different species. There's no iser to eat it if it grows, but you're not allowed to allow it to exist in your field. And let's assume that the guy owns a field in Eretz Yisrael, but the land still has Kedusha, and therefore, there's no Isser upon you. You didn't plant the kilayim, it's not your field, but when you get involved somehow, then you have some connection to the field, and apparently you're not allowed to help the field grow, because that's like planting kilayim. It's like watering of the grass on Shabbos, even though that's not actual Zriya, but it's a kind of Zriya, just like Zriya helps something grow, so watering or hoeing in this case helps it grow. But you're allowed to help him uproot the stuff, kidei lemaidus atifla, to eliminate the kilayim, because there certainly is a notion that we desire to eliminate kilayim from the fields. So ordinarily, there is a Mishnah in Shkalim that talks about the municipal works of the city, when they would go and what the municipal workers were doing. One of the things they used to do is they used to be oker kilayim. They would go in the fields, but these were Jewish fields. And they would, if they saw stuff, so initially the Mishnah says they would uproot the stuff, but the balavatim were happy because their fields got weeded, courtesy of the Beis Din. So then they used to take the stuff, and they used to declare it hefker, throw it in the shesaram for people to take the stuff. The balavatim was still happy because their fields got weeded, until finally they decided to be mafkir the field if you didn't remove your kilayim. So there isn't, that's an issue with Jewish fields, but non-Jewish fields, so it's not our responsibility, and therefore it's not our problem. But this guy happens to be working in the field. He happens to be working with the guy in the field, and he wants the kilayim to be there until he gets the job done. If somehow magically, the kilayim is uprooted before he gets to do it, he loses on the deal. Now, the question is there a real isser, a bona fide isser in being mikayim kilayim? So the Gemara says the following: Savrua hamani Rabbi Akivahi, the Amar hamikayim bekilayim loke. So the Gemara wants to say for the moment that this brisa that claims that you're allowed to work for the guy uprooting his kilayim is assuming Rabbi Akiva's opinion that if you are mikayim kilayim, if you're mikayim kilayim, you're loke. So Rashi explains that how are you loke? If the kilayim grows in your field and you're watching it, so it might be that you have an obligation to uproot it, but you can't get malchus because you haven't done anything. We usually assume that a lav she'ein bo maisa, a lav, a negative prohibition that doesn't entail you actively doing something, you can't actually get malchus for. So Rashi says here, on the third line, Rashi says, the imzra'an acher, if somebody else planted it, so you didn't do it, u'bozev asa lahem siyog v'geder k'dei l'kaiman. If you build a fence around the area to protect it, so then loka. Rashi introduces the scenario to explain why you actually did something that contributes to the kiyum, to the continued existence of the kilayim, and therefore you are loke. And the Gemara is going to go on in a moment to quote a brisa, but just to sort of explain, so where's the Gemara going with this? So there's an isser for me to do something actively in order to protect the kilayim in the field, and let's assume it's true even if it's a goy's field, if it's an Eretz Yisrael, so then why am I allowed, even if I might not get malchus, why am I allowed to be oker kilayim in the field? When I get involved, I'm basically hoping, at least I'm hoping, that the kilayim remains there until I get to it to do my job. So the fact that you're allowed to be Oker B'Kalayim demonstrates, that's what Rav Nachman was trying, that's what the Gemara is trying to prove for Rav Nachman, as a proof for Rav Nachman, the fact that I'm allowed to be uproot the Kalayim and be hired for that job, at least for the moment, so therefore it means I'm Rotze B'Kiyumo, I want the Kalayim to be there, because if it's not there, I won't get paid for a job.
What was the prohibition for Rotze B'Kiyumo by the Bonazar? What's the pasuk?
I don't think that
isn't there a
So Tosfos, I believe, quotes. Does he say no? It's by it's Tosfos. I don't think that there is a.
What would be the scriptural source for the prohibition for wanting?
I don't think
to exist.
So again, I don't. As I said earlier, I'm not sure that either is an Isser Daraisa per se, but there is a sense that you're getting hana'ah from the Isser's continued existence. You're getting benefit from it, and therefore they're analogous. And if one would be prohibited, the other would be prohibited. In the end, the Gemara is going to conclude that it's fine. That just wanting something to exist, if you don't get any benefit, wanting something to exist, if you're on your way to destroying it, is not a problem. I'm not sure what the scenario would be where you want it to exist, and it would be usher, because obviously you can't do work with the Yayin Nesach, you can't transport it, you can't do other things. This is a unique case. This is a case where you want it to exist so that you can get rid of it. So the Gemara now explains what is Rabbi Akiva's opinion. So the Gemara says, "Ditanya, haminachesh v'hamachape b'kilayim loke." If you weed where you have kilayim growing, or you machape, you turn over the ground and cover over the seeds, and this kilayim there, you get malkos. And Rabbi Akiva Omer, afa mekayim. Rabbi Akiva says, even if you do something where you don't act to help the thing grow, you do an act for the purposes of protecting it, you get malkos for that. It's minayin. How do you know that? So my time at the Rabbi Akiva, Amar Kra, sadcha lo sizra kilayim. The pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim says that you're not allowed to plant your field with kilayim. Ein li ela zorea mekayim minayin toma lomar asadcha lo kilayim is the way it should read. It's a very strange reading, but they read the following: behem tchalo sarbia kilayim sadcha lo. So kilayim sadcha lo. Rashi tries to explain why the word order should have been different. I'm not 100% convinced, certainly not on a pshat level, but based upon that reading, that sadcha. Kilayim sad chalo, before you even get to the word tizra, is that even without zriya, there's a prohibition of kilayim in your field, and that's what Rabbi Akiva says, is even though you didn't plant it, there's an iser lav of mekayim kilayim. So, the ilu, now, once we've assumed, the Gemara is going to challenge that in a moment, once we've assumed that for Rabbi Akiva, there's an iser being mekayim kilayim, and we have a brisa that we want to say is Rabbi Akiva, it's not named, that says that you're allowed to be oker kilayim for a guy. So v'ilu lema'utei tifla shari, you see that even for Rabbi Akiva, even though there's an iser lav of being mekayim the kilayim, there is no iser if your interest in the kilayim being there is so that you can actually destroy it. So the Gemara says, lo, not true. Hamani rabbanan hi. Now, maybe this brisa is the rabbanan, and the truth is, how would you know? There's no indication in the brisa itself yet. Marshall?
So, if you bought a field that already had kilayim in it, there would be no question, I think, that you could remove it, correct?
That you could or would have to?
That you would have to.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, if it grows on you...
Why is it even a shaila whether you're allowed to derive monetary benefit from removing kilayim? Because the field happens to be owned by a guy, and you know that if you bought it yourself, or it actually is sadcha, so... The real cash maybe should be, can you buy it at all? Because at the time you buy it, you're getting,
right.
Leaving that aside, why is this even a hard question?
So let me, I want to make one point though, to make the question a little bit harder. Remember that there's no Isser Hana'a from Kilei Zorin. Right? There's an Isser planting. For Rabbi Akiva, there's an Isser Laf of being Mekayim. It's clear everybody holds. The Mishnah, I think it's very clear that if you have Kilayim in your field, you're supposed to remove it. You might not violate a Losasa, you might not get Malkus just because you build a fence around it and you're doing Maisa to Mekayim it like Rabbi Akiva, but there does seem to be an obligation to remove it. So it's not really from the perspective of Isser Hana. If I buy a field with Kilayim, it's not going to be a problem because it's costing me. If I have to uproot it, I don't get benefit at all from the Kilayim in any sense.
That's not really right. You're increasing the value of the field, just like you would be when you're plowing or furrowing or doing anything else.
Not necessarily. So yes and no. In other words, it's not clear to me that the amount of increase in the value of the field because you remove something that's kilayim outweighs the labor that has to go into doing it. Well, no, the field produces much more. But on the local question of the kilayim, I don't think that you're getting hana. It's a pain that you have to deal with it. Maybe a little stuff grows a little, maybe. I'm not even sure it grows a little better. But on the whole, it's certainly a loss to you, the fact that you have to, it would be cheaper to buy the field and not uproot the kilayim than to buy the field and have to uproot the kilayim. So what it sounds like the Gemara is doing here, and the Rishonim don't really clarify this, at least not sufficiently that I can see it, is that if there's an isser of being mekayim kilayim, so then if hiring myself out for a job to remove the kilayim is considered being mekayim the kilayim because I want it to be there till I do the job, so then if that's mutter, then you see that if the purpose of your being mekayim is to destroy it, that's not called being mekayim kilayim. I don't know if Rabbi Akiva would say you get malkos for hiring yourself out for the job because you haven't done anything. The only time you do something is when you uproot it, and that actually is a good thing. It's by the same notion that if you, even though it's not your yayin, let's say it's not your yayin nesach, there's a mitzvah to destroy avodah zarah from the world. And certainly, while you don't violate anything when you don't destroy the yayin nesach, but if here comes your, if you have an opportunity to do so, certainly there's a mitzvah to do it. But let's say I'm doing something where I'm in effect desiring the opposite. Instead of my being destroying the stuff, I want it to exist. I think that's the analogy that's being drawn to kilayim. I don't think there's a mitzvah per se for me to go around and buy off the guy's yayin nesach to destroy it. But once I'm in that situation, certainly it's a positive outcome. In the same way, there's no mitzvah for me per se to invest effort to remove the guy's kilayim, at least for the moment. So the Gemara now says that no. So this mishnah could be the Rabbanon. And that's why the Rabbanan say it's mutter to hire yourself out to be oker kilayim for the goy, because there's no iser lav of being mekayim the kilayim in the first place. So the fact that you want the kilayim to exist a little bit longer is certainly not something that will be held against you. So now the Gemara says, "E Rabbanan ma'ir yaokrim afilu kiyumei nami shaper dami." According to the Chachamim, the fact that the Braisa says that you're allowed to hire yourself to oker the kilayim for the guy sounds as if that you're not allowed to do anything less than that. For example, let's say the guy wanted you to build a fence around the field. Now, according to the Chachamim, that should be permitted. It's not your kilayim, right? There's no iser being mekayim kilayim. If it were your own and you built a fence around it, you wouldn't be loka. So why does the Braisa say that only okrin imo b'kilayim? There would have been something, a bigger chiddush you could have told us that you'd be allowed to do, which is to be mekayim those kilayim. So that's what the Gemara's question is. If it's the Rabbanon, so then even kiyume would be permissible.
So it's back to saying that it's...
It's Rabbi Akiva, right? And that should, in fact, be proof for Rav Nachman. So now the Gemara says, Hacha b'maya skina, no. It's a totally different issue. It has nothing to do, it's really the Rabbanon, that there's no Isser being Mekayim Kilayim. So you want to know what's the Chiddush of the Braisa? Kegon the Ka'avid Bechinam. No, the question is not, the Braisa doesn't say anything about being paid by the guy. It's a case where you want to do it for free. All right, so what's the problem? You would think that's the best of all worlds. Not so simple. Because there's an Isser, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's a machlokas, of giving a matnas chinam to an Oved Avodah Zarah. To give a gift for nothing. Nothing in exchange. Not someone you know, not someone you're going to get a favor back. To do that with a guy, that's part of the prohibition of lo sechanim. It's one of three interpretations that we learned years ago. At the end of the first perek, one prohibition of lo sechanim is to give them, not parking, to give them chanoya bekarka, to give a permanent presence of an Oved Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael to sell them land. A second prohibition was to give them chen, to admire them or something like that. And the third prohibition was to give them a matnas chinam, which is a machlokas, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara suggests that maybe this brisa is a case, if really mekayim kilayim, you're not loka. There's no iser in kiyum. The problem here that the brisa is telling you're allowed to do is you're allowed to do this for nothing, even though you're doing the guy a favor. Even though you're going for it's a matnas chinam, so it's permitted. The Amar, litein lahem matnas chinam is aser. So the Gemara says, still, no, you know what? You can still prove the point. Mid Rabbi Yehuda, Nishma the Rabbi Akiva. If you're going to say that Rabbi Yehuda Why does Rabbi Yehuda permit giving a matnas chinam to a guy? After all, it would seem to be some type of prohibition. So the answer is, the Gemara says, apparently from Rabbi Yehuda Nishmal Yakiva, Lavam Rabbi Yehuda Asr Litei Lematnas Chinam Avalam Ute Tifla Shapir Dami. If you see for Rabbi Yehuda what you have, and it's even a stronger prohibition there, or giving a Matnas Chinam is a prohibition, but if the purpose of giving the Matnas Chinam is in order to reduce the Tifla, reduce the bad things in the world, that's permitted. So then the Rabbi Akiva Nami, Afal Gav, Dam Rabbi Akiva, Makaim Bekalaim Loka, Lema Ute Tifla Shapir Dami. And now the Gemara says, Vitulo Midi. End of discussion. I have a question, but go ahead, Marshall, what's your question?
So we discussed 2 weeks ago whether sort of psychic satisfaction could be in consideration, or maybe it was last week, for a contract. So isn't it right that a Manah Chinam definitionally would be a Kiddush Hashem? Because if you have no expectation of any kind of getting anything back, and you simply do something nice for someone genuinely gratis, very good, and then you work the other, does that actually count?
So I can answer the question. The answer is yes, it does. The one of the probably classic examples, though it's not formulated this way in the Gemara. The Gemara talks about the prohibition of returning aveda of an akum, and the Gemara.
An akum.
It seems to be an oved avodah zarah.
No, but any aveda at all.
Yeah, any aveda. Aside from the fact that there seems to be no obligation to a non-Jew, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin, not in the main sugya in Bava Metzia, says that one who returns an aveda to an akum is mekayim lema'an sufos haravas hatzmeya from Parashas Nitzavim. And the Rambam quotes the din, but he says if it's lekadesh shem shamayim, so then it's mutar. And the truth is, what's not acknowledged there, but essentially every single case is Kiddush Shem Shemayim, unless, if you want to answer the question on a little level here, if you take off your yarmulke before you return the aveda. So he doesn't know. I know we know we take off to do other things, but here you take it off, and now he doesn't know you're Jewish. So it won't be a Kiddush Hashem because he does. He just a guy did it for him, but it's not a Kiddush Hashem. So you could. You're right. The prohibition of matnas chinam, it virtually doesn't exist. It doesn't exist because we almost never give somebody something for nothing, right? When you give a tip, when you give a gift to someone, you don't have to do so. Typically, when you're encountering a non-Jew, it's for something they did or something they're going to do. If you give it to the doorman in your building, right? If you give it to the person who served you at the restaurant, so you're giving it either for something they did or for something they're going to do. A matnas chinam is really, really, really hard. To come up with.
If the receiver is unaware.
Correct. The receiver is unaware who's giving it to them.
Then it will be
a matnas chinam. Right. So in this case, the way to make them unaware is you take off your yarmulke. You know, or you decide to go through the guy's field and uproot the kelayim without telling him. He doesn't know who did it. I guess once I said that I should at least, it would be, since that is one of the more challenging halachas, it would be inappropriate for me not to quote the Yerushalmi here. Rav Shimon ben Shetach. So apparently he used to work with flax, which was a terrible, terrible, I mean, it was really unpleasant. So his Talmidim said to him, Rebbe, you shouldn't, that's not an appropriate profession for you, you should be a truck driver. So they went out to get him a donkey. They went to the shuk and they bought a donkey, and then they came back, they discovered there was a diamond hanging around the donkey's neck. And they said, Rebbe, you're never going to have to work another day in your life. So Shimon Shetach looked at this and said, tell me something, did the owner of the donkey know about this diamond? They said, no. So he said, well, go take it back to him and return it. Of course, you could imagine in certain circles people would say, oh, great, I'll take it back. So it's Talmidim, they're so firm, they say to Rebbe, even according to the Man D'Amar who says that Gezel Shalakum is prohibited, but Avedaso is Mutter. So he says to them, what do you think? Do you think that Shimon ben Shetach is a barbaron? You think I'm a barbarian? He said, I would much prefer to hear from the guy, Brich Elohim Yudai, blessed is the God of the Jews, from all the money in the world. So the answer is every time you return an Aveda, if you're identified as a Jew, so by definition it's a Kiddush Hashem. So there's the law and there's the narrative, and I think the narrative speaks larger volumes, speaks much louder than the law does in this particular case. So the Gemara says, anyway, if Rabbi Yehuda is willing to allow you to give a matnas chinam to be my tifla, so then maybe Rabbi Akiva would say also, you can be mekayim kilayim in order to be my tifla. And that's the Gemara says, tulo midi. So I'm going to ignore the Gemara for the moment, just make one observation, and you already sort of picked up on this, Marshall, which is that really called a matnas chinam? In other words, isn't the fact that you're mamai tifla mean, it's not that it's okay, we set aside the prohibition, but it means it's no longer bechinam. In other words, when I do it for you, and you're an Oved Avodah Zarah, and you shouldn't do good things for people who are bad people, so if I do it for no reason, that's a matnas chinam. When I'm getting something, in this case, I'm reducing the amount of kalayim in the world, so I'm not doing it for the guy. It's not a matana to him. It's a matana to the spiritual realms that we have, you know, whatever damage kalayim does in the spiritual realms, I have now eliminated that. So one would almost say, it's not that matnas chinam, is set aside because it's lama ute tifla. I would say in this, technically speaking, it is no longer a matnas chinam. Okay, I'm not sure what it may be that the prohibition of being mekayim kilayim in this case and allowing, wanting the avodah zarah to exist might sort of be in the same category. In other words, rotza b'kiyumo might not be considered rotza b'kiyumo when your ultimate purpose is to destroy it. That might be the analogy to matnas chinam. But either way, the Gemara says, end of discussion. And it's clear that you're allowed to hire yourself out in order to smash barrels of yayin nesach. Okay. So even if one was not relying upon the Ramah, Bisman Hazeh, that we permit Stam Yenam Bahana, and it's only in drinking, but if someone hired you to go, you know, smash the wine, you know, wine bottles in a store because they were doing tshuva and they didn't want their Stam Yenam anymore, and let's say you were Sfardi, so you didn't hold of the Ramah, so it would still be Mutter. Yes?
So, being Makar Lezara makes perfect sense, because that's where inherently adapt in the world, right? But is Kalayim in the same category? Or you're making the assumption that reducing the amount of Kalayim in the world is actually a good thing. Why is that right? Why is the fact that in the Indian subcontinent it's filled with Kalayim, which was never mitzvah on them at all, why does it offend the notion of godliness and improve the world by going to Pongal and removing some Kalayim?
So what I alluded to earlier is that this is only going to be true in Eretz Yisrael. And on the assumption that Ein Kinyan L'Nachri Lafkia, that a Nachri's purchase of the land is not Mafkia, it's from its Kedusha, in which case, in principle, there should be no Kalayim growing in Eretz Yisrael. What happens in India wouldn't be our problem. Where the discussion that we shown gets interesting is that if it's Kilaya Kerem, there's an Issid Rabbanon L'Chutz La'aretz on Kilaya Kerem. But assuming it's Kilaya Yisrael, the way Tosfos explains, it's Eretz Yisrael, and that's the only issue. Okay, so that was the end of this discussion, Mahu Lishbar B'yayin Nesach. Because of that discussion, because of that setup, the Gemara now relates to the next question, which is, Hadur Yosvi Bekami Ba'ilahu. They were hanging around. I guess the Rebbe didn't show up to shir, so they're hanging around the base medrash. So this is what they were doing. This was their hak. First they spoke about hiring yourself out to break the barrels, and now they had another different question. Hadur Yosvi Bekami Ba'ilahu. Demei avodas kochavim, b'yad oved kochavim, mahu. And this is actually a really, I don't know how practical, but theoretically a very important question. If a guy, if I have avodah zarah, and I sell the avodah zarah as a Jew, so the avodah zarah, obviously, there's no bittul. Once I own the avodah zarah, avodah zarah shei Yisrael, we learned not as many years ago, there's no bittul for that. There's no bittul for avodah zarah shei Yisrael. And when I sell the avodah zarah, it's tofes es dameha. The money that I receive now becomes aser bahana as has kedushas avodah zarah as well. The question is, what if a guy sells avodah zarah? What is the status of that money? Now remember, a guy has the capacity at least to be mevatel his avodah zarah. But Gemara wants to know, what's the din? Mi tofes es dameha b'yad oved kochavim olo. Now here the guy, he could be mevatel avodah zarah, but he wasn't necessarily mevatel.
Was he ayin nesach getting?
Correct, but he didn't say ayin nesach. It's okay. Going to come up later in the Gemara, and the Rishonim point that out, how you deal with that as a separate question. Ayin nesach, tekrovis avodah zarah, we learned, has no bittul. Only avodah zarah itself.
How do you know where the money comes from? Money's fungible. How do you know where the money comes from? That means you can't do business with guys at all.
That's why I said potentially. Let's put it this way: if you had a non-Jewish wine store, and you were a guy who owned a wine store, and you were, let's say, Sephardi, so again, to ignore the Ramah's Kula, so then you might have concerns about doing business with that person. Like if you were a supplier,
still couldn't prove that that's where the money came.
So the question would be, where would be a rove of the money? If a rove of the money that he had came from the selling of the wine, and it was tofes es dameha, so then it might be an issue. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar lehu Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman answered once again, Mistabra demei avodos kochavim biyado kochavim mutarim. He says it's mutter. How do you know that? He says, "Me dahanu da asu lekame derabba baravua." There were some non-Jews who wanted to convert, who came to Rabba Bar Avuha. So Amar Lahu, he gave them some advice. Zilu zabinu koma de islahu v'tu isgairu. He said, first sell all your stuff before you convert. Right? If you have, means Avodah Zarah, make sure you sell it, because if you convert, and now you have it, it's now Avodah Zarah Shei Yisrael, and you're stuck with it. Okay. So, my taima, what must the reason be? Lav mishum de kasavar de mei avodas kochavim biyadav kochavim mutarim. Maybe that's why. So the Gemara says no. V'dilma shani hasam de chevan de date liigayure vadai b'teila. No. Do you know why? It's mutar? Because he's mevatel of the Zohar. He's already decided to convert. He doesn't believe it anymore. Which, by the way, will create complications for the next discussion, which we actually touched upon a long time ago, which was, who is able to be mevatel of the Zohar? If you have a Noahide who doesn't believe in it, does he have the capacity to be mevatel of the Zohar? So that's going to be, I think, the next question they're going to discuss. But right now, let's assume for the moment that even though he doesn't believe it anymore, but he's not a Ger Toshav either. He's not yet a Ger Toshav. He's not a Ger Toshav, and he's not a Ger Tzedek. So the Gemara is being docha by suggesting that maybe the reason why you're allowed to, why that money would be okay, is because he's Mevatel the Avodah Zarah, and therefore the money is not the Avodah Zarah. Yes?
But if he's Mevatel it before he converts, why couldn't he sell it after he converts? He wouldn't have to sell it before he converts.
That's a good question. That's a very good question. See, they asked the other question, which was what Sam says. Tosos asked about Yayin Nesach, which the Gemara hasn't mentioned, but we'll mention in the next piece. And as Yayin Nesach has no bittel, so if it's mutter for him to sell the Yayin Nesach and use the money, it has to be because Avodah Zarah is not tofeses tameh by a goy. That has to be the reason why. But does anybody ask your question? No, and what the Ritva, I don't think, asked your question either. Oh, no, he does. The first Tosis asked it. I didn't say, I missed it. So Tosis gives a teretz, but it's not a persuasive teretz. He wants to know, why didn't they tell the goyim to break it, and it'd be batel? So the answer he gives, and in the end, the reason why he didn't tell him that is because it would sell for more money, right? You know, you want to sell to another. If you break all your crucifixes and then you go to your Christian crucifix seller, he's going to say, "What good are these?" You know. But the only question I would have is that you don't have to break in order to mevatel. He can mevatel a pepeh. I don't know why Tosis. That's a good question. Tosis was bothered by your question, but I'm not satisfied with the way he formulates the question or his answer. Okay, so the Gemara, for the moment, though, has suggested that maybe the reason why he advised the goyim, who were the prospective converts, to sell their stuff, is because mistama they were mevatel it. So elamehacha, you know how we can prove that demei avodas kolchavim is not tofeses demeha? Yisrael shahayanoshe ba'oved kolchavim mana. If a guy owed a Jew a mana, he owed him 100 zuz. This could have come right out of the medieval period where the Jews were the money lenders. Umachar avodas kochavim vehevi lo yayin yayin esech vehevi lo muta. If the guy goes ahead and in order to raise the money, he sells some of the zerah, he sells some yayin esech, which has no bittul. So then it's muta to take that money. Avolam omer lo hamtein li ad she'emkar avodas kochavim v'avi lecha. Yai nesech v'avi lecha, aser. Then it's aser. So now the Gemara says,
that money is not fungible.
Well, the question is, why? Right? The Gemara asks, Maishna Resha, Maishna Seifa. In other words, the Resha makes it clear that the Me'avodos Kochavim is not a problem. But then why in the Seifa is it any different? Just because he says, because the guy says to you, hang on, you know, don't tear my wallet, you know, from me. Don't go into my house and grab my stuff. Just let me sell some Avodah Zarah, Yayin Nesach, and then I'll pay you. So then it's Aser.
It's a difference of knowing if it's fungible or not, right? It's a difference of knowing for sure whether it is common certainty as opposed
well,
to
maybe. Let's let the Gemara answer the question. Because again, in that case, no, but in the first case, in the Resha, the assumption is you know that the way he got this cash was he didn't have any other cash. Otherwise, he would just give you cash if he had already. The way he got the cash was he sold some of the Zara or some Yayin Nesach. And yet it's Mutter. Right, so it's not about fungibility. So the Gemara answers, Amar of Shesha, Seifa Mishun Dahavelei, Ki Rotze Bekiyuma. It's because there, and again, this is ultimately not going to be destroyed. Right, the guy's just selling it to someone else. And when it's Rotze Bekiyumo, then it's also this Hana that comes in directly to you. As opposed to, they hire you to be shover the barrels, because that Rotze Bekiyumo is not really Rotze Bekiyumo, because really, it's Rotze Bekiyumo so that you can destroy it and make some money while you're at it. So the Gemara says, V'chi Rotze Bekiyumo ki hagavna mi asir? Is it really asir in this case when Rotze Bekiyumo? When your purpose is not actually to take the Yayin Nesach, you're not getting anything from the Yayin Nesach and from the Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, "Vatanan ger v'oved kochavim sheyershu avihem." You have a Jew, a non-Jew, and a convert who inherit from their father, who is an oved kochavim sheyershu avihem oved kochavim. So ger yochal lomar lo, the ger can say to his brother, "Tol ata avodas kochavim va'ani ma'os." Why don't you take that part of the estate? I'll take this part of the estate. It would be aser. That would be prohibited. So in this case, the ger, so first the question is, why is he allowed to do that? We'll talk about that in a moment. The reason it's problematic is that the assumption usually is that when a person dies and leaves his or her estate to the heirs, everything is owned in joint partnership, and then you divide it up. It's owned immediately in joint ownership, and eventually you come and you divide it up, which means if the father or mother bequeaths a field, multiple fields, let's say there are two children who are heirs, and bequeaths two fields, each one is a joint owner in each field. What they do then is they decide it's not convenient to be joined to ownership in many cases. They don't want it. They want to go their own ways. So they agree to divide it up. And basically what you're doing is, I'm buying your half of your field, and you're buying half of my field. That's the way it works. So that's a question we have to deal with. Why is it that the ger is allowed to do this? After all, if there's avodah zarah and non-avodah zarah stuff in the estate, so he inherited half of each, and the avodah zarah half, he's just got to say, it's yours. There's nothing I can do about it. Putting that question aside, why he's not actually even a half owner, he still wrote a bekiyumo. Until they agree to the division, he wants the avodah zarah to be intact. Because if something happens and it breaks, then his brother's going to say to him, sorry, tough luck, it's not worth it, I'm not taking it, we're going to have to do a different division.
But the moment that the father dies and leaves the estate to both of them, isn't it immediately in their rishus?
Yes.
So
we have to deal with the problem. Let's pretend for the moment that doesn't happen for whatever reason. Let's presume for the moment. I'll say something which is not true, that some of the Rishonim say here, but it's clear, I think, from the Gemara and Kiddushin, the parallel is not true. Let's say there's Breira. Let's say the concept of Breira is that once the division is done, we say that it is retroactively clarified, Huvar Lemafreya, that this was your portion and this was my portion. And I really never owned it jointly. I owned the part that I got, you owned the part that you got. There's a machlokas in the Gemara where the Breira works on a Daraisa level or only works on the Rabbanon or not at all. And we Paskin, you cannot say Breira by issues that are Daraisa. So it won't really solve the problem here. But you could have thought that for the moment, that there's Breira. That when they divide it up this way, as long as you don't have any point at which the ger actually takes possession of the avodah zarah, then it's okay. Because you say breira, and it turns out that this was really my portion, this was really your portion. It's not true, and we're not going to say that, but let's just hold off the question for a moment.
It is true under both U.S. law and common law.
But immediately.
Which is, you can, no, the opposite. You can disclaim inheritance, and it never is deemed to be your possession.
Right, so in halacha, you can also, there's no such thing as disinheriting or disclaiming inheritance. It's an automatic process that the only way to disinherit a child is to give the money away before a person dies, any heir, not just a child. And once the heir dies, the money that the property goes to the heir, once the person dies, the money goes to the heirs automatically. Automatically, it becomes part of we'll call it tfisas habayis, and we call it the estate. And there's no avoid. You can give it away. You can destroy it if you want. But it does, for halachic purposes, it means that if you inherit and you have creditors, that one moment right after the death means the creditors can now get a lien on the property that you inherited from a bequeather, whoever it would be. So in that way, halacha is different. It's an or, Yerusha, I know I often say, I may have said this yesterday, like ribbis is one of the areas where you cannot modify. It's iser v'heter. Yerusha is another area, it's not so much iser v'heter, but the transfer of the property is automatic al pi halacha. You can give it away afterwards, but it's automatic al pi halacha. So the Gemara says that this is a case where the ger wants the avodah zarah to be intact long enough for his brother to take possession, and then he doesn't care what happens afterwards. So you see that this, and this is the same thing is true with the guy who owes you money. When he says, give me a day so I can sell my next avodah zarah, yeah, you don't want the stuff to get destroyed in the interim because otherwise he won't have the money to pay you, but nonetheless, you're not, you know, that's not your responsibility fundamentally. That's not called rotza b'kiyumo. So the Gemara says, no, you know what? It is a problem. And the Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bar Ula Masnisen Bavodas Kochavam Meshalakes Lafi Shivareha. So it's a case where the Avodah Zarah is made of precious metal. And it doesn't actually worth, you know, if the Avodah Zarah is made of a pound of gold, it doesn't matter whether it's an Avodah Zarah shape or not. It's worth the same thing whether it's broken or intact. So it's Avodah Zarah HaMishchalekes Lafi Shivareha, and therefore you're not Rotza B'Kimo. You don't care that the you don't object if someone were to break the Avodah Zarah. Marshall, this is not the first Gemara you've learned. And then the Gemara turns on 1 second. That works if you're talking about the Zara. But the wine is going to break. If the wine gets spilled out, it's gone. How can you talk about wine that basically that you could in effect destroy, but you're not wrote to Bekiyum or Eziz? So the Gemara says, yeah, you know what? Ika lememar becheres hadrayani. Another concept we saw earlier in the Masechta. The Hadrian pottery, what they used to do according to the Gemara, is they used to take the pottery, it was very, very absorbent, and they would put it in the wine, it would absorb the wine, and that's how they would carry the flavor, the wine, and then they would carry it, the soldiers would take it where they were going, and then they would soak it in water, and then the wine would leach out, and they would have wine that way. That's the Cheres Hadrayani. So the Cheres Hadrayani is Asur Bana, because it's full of Yayin Nesach. So that's the case if you could have Lefi Shivareha. Okay, so there still is a problem, and I don't want to explore it. It doesn't help breaking. I mean, I guess the Yayin Nesach is the Yayin Nesach, but there's no way to destroy it. I guess breaking the Cheres Hadrayani actually doesn't do anything, because you can have little pieces and put them into the water. But okay, so that's what the Gemara says. But now the Gemara asks, but v'alo rotze b'kiyumo shelo yignobu v'shelo yovedu. Okay, so you're happy. You don't mind if it breaks, but you do mind if it gets lost or stolen.
Value.
So therefore, and you would lose if it's not there. So you see that rotza b'kiyumo is not a problem in this type of a case. So why is it a problem when you lend the money to the guy and he comes and says, just give me time to sell my yayin nesach me'avodah zarah. So Elamar Papa says, no, it is a problem. You want to know, now really solve the problem of the ger. Why is it not a problem by a ger? Yerushas hager ka'amris, shani yerushas hager, da'akilu barabanan shemayaser l'kukula. And to go a step further, you really have to add the following. This is based upon the parallel Gemara in Kiddushin that the Gemara is in quote here. Min ha-Torah, a ger does not inherit from his father.
It's not his father.
It's not his father anymore. He's a born again, is what we would say. That's cut Gershonola, Gershon is Gayer, Kikotan Shinola Dam. He's like a born again person.
All these inyanim, okay. I mean, why doesn't that apply across the board?
And what do you mean?
I mean, any of these inyanim, if it's a Tinok Shinolda, if he's just like an. Then how is he taking any of the Yerusha? How is he? I mean,
so the Rabbanan will misaken that a ger is Yerush along with his brothers, so as to not provide him an incentive to backslide. Shemayasa l'kukula, but midaraisa he would inherit nothing. So midarab.
Governed by Jewish law, so there's no analytic relevance. If a non-Jew dies.
In a Torah society, a non-Jew, you have a ger toshav who lives in Eretz Yisrael, he dies, he has two sons, one who is a ger toshav, one who is a ger tzedek, mid oraisa, the ger toshav inherits the entire state, the ger tzedek inherits nothing.
So we're talking about an oven about a zara who dies, and one of his kids
is it's true also, and outside...
The Jewish law does not really govern the inheritance laws of the non-Jewish deceased.
Why not?
It's just relative.
The point is that if the ger to midoraisa, we don't dictate the rules for non-Jews not living in our society. But if you have someone who's not a ger, who's technically I mean, in this case, I'm with the Benaret. So you have somebody saying, "Oh, we have the Zohar," but in a case where we have cases, listen. Today we have, the Rambam says that when it's Yodenu Takifa al Hagoyim, so we don't allow any person who is not a Ger Toshav to even, he says, you're not able to travel through Eretz Yisrael. So I always like to point out that even though you have Jewish sovereignty, it's not Yodenu Takifa, and it wasn't Chazal. They didn't have sovereignty because we live in an interconnected world. So it means today. It means today that al Pidin Torah, a non-Jew, it doesn't matter Ger Toshav of Ovdo Zara, inherits from his father, the non-Jew of the Ger Toshav. The Ovdo Zara of the Ger Toshav. But if you have someone who converts, and the question is asked, is he entitled to a share in the estate? The answer al Pidin Torah is no, because he's not related to his father or his mother anymore, whoever died.
And I think what Marshall was saying is that according to the Guy's law, he's giving the inheritance to his son. Now, so we can't stop him from putting in his will, my Jewish son now gets half of my inheritance. I think that's what he's saying.
Well, but we would say from a halachic perspective, it's irrelevant.
Accepted, right.
Well, no, I wouldn't say, in other words, we wouldn't say can't... Well, no, it's not right. In other words, Jerusha is automatic.
Right.
So in a Torah law governed society, however the Oved Avodah Zarah came to be living there, if they come and ask the Shaila, what's the din? Al pi din Torah, the answer would be the Jewish child, the ger, would not inherit anything. But the Rabbanan instituted a takana to allow him to take a share in the estate, which in this case works to his advantage, because if he really were a Yoresh Minat Torah, he would automatically, along with his brother, inherit the entire estate, be a joint partner in everything, and he wouldn't be able to do the swap. He'd only be able to take half of the parts that actually Motor Bahanah. But because Yerusha Sager is only the Rabbanan, when the Rabbanan instituted it, they did it in such a way so that he shouldn't be mafsid if it's possible. If three quarters of the estate were Avodah Zarah's, there'd be nothing you could do about that. He'd only get a quarter. But assuming that there's enough in the estate where he could take the non-Avodah Zarah portion, since it doesn't automatically come to him, and he's not really entitled to it, Hakana would be that as long as the Avodah Zarah was not Bala Yado yet, he never took possession, he can say with his brother, the Rabbanim will let me take half of the estate which you're going along with, and I'll choose this half. So that's what the Gemara says. Okay.
Is the issue to protect the Ger, or to prevent the Geisha father from abusing,
it's to protect the Ger. Minat Torah, he has no fair share. His fair share is zero. But we don't want it. We don't want an.
If it was known that his fair share was zero, then he would be abused. He wouldn't even get the what was proper to him.
But it's not. It's not. The whole point is that the Torah says that when a person converts, they're not halachically related to the relatives from before. So it's not. In other words, it's not being abused. That's the halacha. Right. In the same way, we may not like it, and we do all sorts of things to get around it for a good reason. But the Torah says that sons inherit when the daughters sons. The sons inherit, daughters don't inherit. So it doesn't work so well in that world. And most wise people use whatever proper halachic mechanisms to circumvent that. But we wouldn't say in its context it was in a society which it fit more normally. We wouldn't say it was abusive. That was the law. That was the halacha. The Torah said so when they're sons, the sons inherit, the daughters don't. So. Are we looking for converts?
Yeah, because otherwise, he knows when he converts that he's given up.
So you're correct in saying that the Gemara does not present this that we want converts, but the reality is there are converts, and the convert, when he is converting, is not necessarily thinking about those issues. I mean, if you were looking for a way to discourage the prospective Gary, you would say no. Not only is it very hard to be, not only is it Shveret Suzaini Yid, but on top of that, and all the guy want to get us, but on top of that, you should know that if your parents have any money, you're not going to inherit anything.
You tell them that his parents aren't parents anymore, right?
It's the Gemara doesn't say that particular part. I don't know. I suspect that's probably not a point that's emphasized in the gear process. If you want to discourage people and make it Judaism less, I'm not taking a stance on this. You might want to do that. But
are we supposed to discourage people?
We are to an extent. So, but what I was going to say to answer your question here is that you might tell someone that at the time of the gear, but it doesn't make the same impression. You have a 25 or 30 year old person whose parent is 55 or 60 years old. They're thinking about that question, and maybe it could also be that their parent goes out and wins the lottery the next day after they convert. Right. So, but the concern is not that they won't convert. The Gemara says it's Shema Yasal Kukula. You have someone who converted, and now all of a sudden the reality, either because it didn't sink in initially, or because things have changed, their parents, their their bequeathers are now wealthy, and all of a sudden, you know, maybe I want to, you know, be a guy, and maybe the guy will just give me the Yerusha. So the Rabbanan didn't want that, and therefore that's what they did. Marshall.
Can I ask one of my listening questions?
Sure.
Are the majority of converts with whom you work estranged from their own nuclear families?
No.
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 Okay. Fine. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So.
But we don't necessarily. We don't. You know, in the process of conversion, tell them. You know, you're. Once you go into the mikvah, you come out. You're not related to your father and mother. On the contrary, you
would probably encourage relationships.
Correct.
Correct. But
if they ask a technical, I mean, right. We sometimes where there's a pregnancy, let's say, so when the fetus becomes Jewish through the mother's conversion, but the fetus is not related to the father. Anymore. So sometimes we'll explain that, but technically.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So now the Gemara continues on the top, first words on Samach Dalet Amud Beis, Tanya Nami Hachi, Bamed Var Mamurim Sheyorshu, Aval Nishtatfu Asur. So only if they were Yoresh, but if the brothers formed a partnership and now they want to divide it off, now it's too late. You see that once the brothers actually acquire, once the Ger actually acquires real half of the estate, you can't do it anymore because now it's actually selling his share in the Avodah Zarah. Okay, now, they're not done yet. Hadur Yasu V'kami Ba'ilahu. I have another question. Okay, the Rebbe was even later to shear. Ger Toshav, Mahu Shiavatel Avodas Kochavim. Can a Ger Toshav, who's not Jewish, but he's not an Oved Avodah Zarah, and he's formally not an Oved Zarah, can he be Mevatel Avodah Zarah? And the question is, De Polach Mevatel, De Lo Polach Lo Mevatel? Is that whoever worships can be mevatel, whoever doesn't worship can't be mevatelit. O dilma kol debar mine mevatel v'har bay minehu. Or anyone is of the same min, same species, and there are only two species in this discussion, a Jew and a non-Jew, and therefore he's not Jewish, and therefore he has the capacity to be mevatel. So, amra lehu Rav Nachman, mistabra, here Rav Nachman came up with a chumra. De polach mevatel, de lo polach lo mevatel. That only those who worship can be mevatel. So now the Gemara asks, Meisvei, Yisrael shematza avodas kochavim b'shuk, ad shelo basa liyado, omer la'oved kochavim u'mevatla. If a Jew finds an avodah zarah in the shuk, so he doesn't want to take possession of it, he wants to find the guy who mevatel it. We saw this a while back also. There's a contradiction between Divrei Hayamim and Shmuel, what David did with the avodah zarah of the Plishtim. Yes, Itai Hagiti. So in Shmuel it says, Vayisa'im David v'anashav. He and his men carried them off. In Dirayamim it says, Vayomer David v'yisarfu ba'esh. So how do you resolve this contradiction other than suggesting that in Dirayamim they're always mechate on kavod shel David? So one interpretation says, Vayisa'im means to burn. Some of the Pashtunim argue that there is such a root, although I'm not sure in biblical Hebrew. But the Gemara, early in Avodah Zarah, said no. Kan kodem sheba itai, kan la'acha sheba itai. When the army guy, the non-Jewish Itai Agiti, joined the army, so then, before he joined the army, David told them to burn it. Once David joined them, so then Itai was one of his jobs as a first lieutenant was the official Avodah Zarah Mevateler. That was his job. Itai got something here. You know, today we have those people to disarm the minds. Itai's job was to disarm the spiritual minds. So a Jew finds an Avodah Zarah before he reaches it. Before he comes into his possession, Omer la'ovid kochavim vatla. Mishabasa le'yado, eino over Omer la'ovid kochavim vatla. Once he picks it up, it's now the Jews, Avodah Zarah Shei Yisrael has no bittul. Mipnesha amru, ovid kochavim vatla, avodas kochavim shalova shalchavero, bein ovda, vein sh'ein ovda. Because a guy can be mevatla avodah zarah of another ovid avodah zarah, even whether he worships it or doesn't worship it. So, my ovda, my sh'ein ovda. What does it mean? What does it mean that he worships it or doesn't worship it? If you want to say it means two non-Jews who are actually idol worshippers, that's shelo v'shel chavero. What is the Braisa adding when it says bein ovda o bein she'en ovda? So el alav ovda oved kochavim umay she'en ovda ger toshav. You see, obviously what it means is the following. A guy is mevata avodah zarah shelo v'shel chavero. They're both ovda avodah zarah. Bein ovda, bein she'en ovda, is a second case, namely whether he is an oved avodah zarah or whether or not he's a ger toshav. Shema mina ger toshav nami mevata. So the Gemara says, lo. La'olam eim alacha idi v'ido kochavim. It's all goyim. Udaka amris haynu shelo v'shel chavero. No. Reisha, the first case, when it says shelo v'shel chavero, it means they are religious compatriots. They both worship the same avodah zarah. Ze v'ze l'pa'or or v'ze v'ze l'markalus. But the seifa that says bein ovda, bein she'eno ovda, ze l'pa'or v'ze l'markalus. That one of the, is a situation where they're both ovdei avodah zarah, but not the same religion. One is a Pa'or worshipper, one is a Markalus worshipper, and therefore what the Bryce is telling you is as long as he's an Oved Avodah Zarah, even if he doesn't worship the same Avodah Zarah, nonetheless he can be Mevatel. But you have no proof that a Ger Toshav, no proof against Rav Nachman, that a Ger Toshav could be Mevatel.
Why isn't Kevan Rosh HaDikimah a problem? Because when you see the Avodah Zarah in the Shuk, you say, this is great, I'm going to profit from this.
No, because you're destroying it. You're being mevatel it. That's like lishbar b'yayin, and we say it's mutter. Lishbar b'yayin nesach is mutter. This is consistent with what Rav Nachman said earlier. Right. And your question, it's a good question you're asking, in that going back to the Gemara by Itagiti, why was it mutter, and why wasn't that a raya, wrote to Bekiyumo until you mevatel it? Right, that would have been a perfect analog. But once Rav Nachman has reached that conclusion, so then I think that it's not a problem. Okay, so I will stop here. God willing, next week we will pick up. The Gemara is still not quite finished with the full issue, but we will pick up at this point.